welcome to New Books in Art. I'm your host, Lorena Turner. I'm a lecturer in the Communication Department at California State Polytechnic University in Pomona, California. Recently, I spoke with photographer and author Brent Walker. Brent Walker lives in Georgia. His book, The Hidden South, is a series of portraits and interviews with people he met while traveling around the South. I hope you enjoy our conversation. We're talking today with Brent Walker, the author of The Hidden South. He is a photographer and he's based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show, Brent.
Thank you for having me.
Could you start by telling us a little bit about you? Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? That kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. I grew up in Alpharetta, Georgia, which is a suburb just north of Atlanta. And nowadays, it's a very wealthy community. But when I grew up there, it was, you know, it was country. People kind of made fun of us for having accents and stuff like that. So it's definitely changed a lot. But that's where I grew up. I went to school at Catholic school for my first 9 years. And that was a lot different than a lot of my friends. So I kind of had that. I had the Catholic. I went to Catholic school. And then we can get into more details about that later.
Later. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
And then I went to military school for half a year. And then I finished off in public school. And when I say finished off, I finished off until I decided not to go anymore. So I actually didn't finish high school. It went back, got my GED, and ultimately went to and got an associate's degree. But I did not take the normal path as far as school went.
And tell us about your associate's degree. What did you get a degree in?
I have a culinary degree, which I haven't used for many years. Makes me a good date, but not use it for much else. So.
And how do you consider yourself a photographer at this point in your life and career?
Yeah, I've been taking pictures for about 12 years now. And before I started this project, I had a photography business. I actually did pinup photography, which seems like the exact opposite of what I'm doing now. But I traveled all over the South and people would book appointments with me and I would take the pictures. So it was a very, very much a studio setting in which I tried to get as beautiful of pictures as I could. And I retouched people to make them look more perfect. And now I kind of try to find the imperfections and the beauty in those imperfections, I guess. So it's a complete different world.
Are there, they're absolutely different worlds. Are there photographers, kind of other practicing photographers or photographers from the past who inspired you, or who maybe at the start of your work or kind of in your searching for this kind of voice that you've created for yourself?
You know, I can't think of anybody that directly maps to what I'm doing now that I admire tremendously. I've always been drawn to the work of Sally Mann. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she's been on the cover of Time magazine and does really, really interesting work. And there's a guy named, I always butcher his first name, but it's Nobuyoshi Araki, I believe. And he's a Japanese photographer who I've always really admired his work. And there's another guy named Jan Sadek. Again, none of these people have anything to do with this project, but they are people that I admire. I would say there is one photographer named Alex Sof whose style is very different than mine, and whose work is very different than mine, but he has done, I definitely admire his work, and he's done some things where, like, he's gone to Niagara Falls, and, I mean, there's some similarities, but it's not, yeah. Not really close to what I'm doing.
Well, I think people listening to the podcast will definitely know of at least two of those photographers that you mentioned. And I think in Alex Soth's work in comparison to yours, you definitely share a spirit, I think, with his work and his kind of in moving through the country and talking with people and sharing of yourself, you know, and kind of in order to kind of get something from the people that you're photographing.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. I think if you look at our work next to each other, you'd be like, oh, well, this really doesn't have much similarity at all. But if you look underneath the surface, I definitely feel that kinship to what he's doing.
Yeah, sure. I can absolutely see that. Absolutely see that. So I want to ask you about your book, The Hidden South, which came out. I'm sorry that I don't remember this exactly. It came out either late last year or this year, correct?
January of this year, yeah. Okay.
So right in between. Yeah. So The Hidden South. So could you give us a short kind of synopsis of the book?
Yeah, the book is full of over 100 stories and portraits of people that I met all over the South. I tend to want to talk to people who normally don't have a voice. And so it's full of stories that people tell me, and it's usually the tough stuff. It's usually the things that people don't normally talk about. Generally, I kind of, and this may be getting too much in the weeds right now, but I talk to people about, I kind of start off the same way. I ask them to tell me about a person or an event that changed their life for better or worse. And from there, the conversation evolves. And so the book is full of all those conversations and photographs. And also sprinkled in there are photographs of the Southern landscape that help tell the story. I would say that's the overview.
And how did you find the people that you photographed and the people you interviewed? How did you find your subjects?
It really depended on where I was. When I'm in an urban environment, I tend to go to neighborhoods that are more impoverished and people are walking around more. And I simply pull up and tell them about the project, tell them that I'm working on the book, and ask if they'd like to tell me a story about their life.
I found your book really, really fascinating because the way that you've presented the portraits and then the conversation you had with them is that that kind of introduction, of course, is kind of missing. So we see these like really arresting portraits of people's faces and kind of sometimes there's a little bit more information around them. So you get a sense of where they were kind of in the world and in a landscape. And then this like really heavy, heavy, you know, text or discussion that you had with them where we immediately get to some of the core of who those people are and probably in part how you found them.
Yeah, I don't beat around the bush. And I think that, you know, obviously that's not our entire conversation when I put in the book. Sometimes I have 45 minutes or, you know, an hour worth of conversation that I have to get to get down to that, the core of what their story is. But I think that brevity is really important for this project. And in general nowadays, I think that, you know, people like to jump right in and you just get right to the meat of it. I guess part of me, too, has always been okay with punching people in the gut and making them feel it right off the bat. So I'll never be accused of using too much finesse, I don't think. I value personally jumping right in and getting to the meat of what's really going on with them.
And how did, let me get to kind of maybe some of the larger, you know, kind of the parameters of your project, and then that will kind of lead me to some other questions. But do the people, the number of people in the book, so the quantity, which is, you have, your book is 94 pages, I think, and you talk, I think that represents about the number of people that you talk to. You said about 100. Is that where there are many more people that you talk to, and these were just the best of those people and of those stories?
Yeah, I think actually the book is more like 180 something pages.
I guess I'm reading in a slightly different version. I'm sorry. In the PDF, it says 94. So.
Oh, you know what? I bet it's just counting each double page as a page.
It's a single page, right? Sure.
It's almost exactly double that. So yes, there were a lot of stories that didn't make it into the book, and. You know, what I tried to do with this book is I tried to tell a story with the stories, so to speak. So I tried to pick stories that kind of gave an ebb and a flow to the book. But also I had ones that, you know, I was absolutely going to include because they were so compelling and so telling and so so important. And I certainly don't want to say that the ones that didn't get included weren't important. They were. You know, everybody's story is important, and I share a lot of them online that aren't included in the book. But yeah, I think I had my reasons for every story that's in there. Yeah.
Do you another aside? But do you have a Tumblr or a blog or a website where you have a more comprehensive collection of people?
Yes, I do. Right now, if you go to thehiddensouth.com, you'll go to the Tumblr website. I'm in the process of changing that, so I'm developing a new website to house all the stories and everything. But yeah, I post everything for free online, and it's kind of an ongoing stream of stories.
That's great. That's great. So thehiddensouth.com. Okay, so we'll
hiddensouth.com, and then Facebook. Obviously, I think I have the most followers on Facebook. And then Instagram, I actually really love for this. And so I'm on Instagram, and I post there a lot as well.
Well, I will definitely follow you on the latter two.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure, absolutely. I'm sure many other people will too. So back to kind of your process of talking with people. Did you find that people had apprehensions about opening up to you at all, or could you kind of navigate those quickly or just navigate those at all and get just, you know, allow, and people were able to talk to you. They felt comfortable kind of sharing these really kind of dark parts of their lives with you.
For whatever reason, people seem to feel comfortable sharing this stuff with me. I had surprisingly few people say no, although I did have some, and I never try to talk anybody into anything. So if it's a no, it's a no, and I just move on. I think in general, people want to be heard. And so and a lot of these people that are in the book, I don't think anybody's ever asked them about their story before. So when somebody like me comes along and says, hey, I'm interested in what you have to say and I want to share it with other people, I think a lot of people gravitate towards that. Even though these are difficult things to talk about, you know, I have I have some incredible stories of bravery, you know, for them telling them to me. You know, I have one guy in here that I met in Nashville, Tennessee, that that openly told me that he molested a kid when he was a teenager because it had been done to him when he was a kid, and he thought that that's just what was normal. And for a male to say that, you know what I mean, for a grown man to say that he had done that and that this is why he had done it and have that open, honest conversation, you know, a lot of people when I posted that story were very condemning of him. To me, I felt like it was incredibly brave, and I've had good luck.
Fantastic. I mean that kind of luck from a photographer's standpoint and perspective is fantastic. And I mean, just that's kind of what, you know, I think what we want to do at our best, you know, is we want to share people's stories, and we want even the scary stuff or the dark stuff or the uncomfortable stuff. I mean, that's all a part of life. It's important.
I say luck, and I apologize for talking over you, but luck is probably not the right word to use. I think that there was a magic that happened during this whole process. And it was, it's hard to explain because there have been a lot of things that I've done as a photographer that haven't worked out as well. You know, they work, but it takes a lot of work, and it's like you're fighting against the current. And with this project, it was exactly the opposite of that. It was really just going with the current. I mean, it was everything in it, you know, from raising the money on Kickstarter to produce the book to people telling me their stories to just everything kind of unfolded in a perfect way. There was definitely something at work, whatever that thing is, you know, that that creatives get a glimpse of every once in a while. You know, if we're lucky, we get to be part of this bigger thing. You know.
Sure, I think magic is a perfect word to describe it.
Yeah, I think
absolutely.
So too.
I read about one of the first encounters with someone that you had for this project, and you say that that you were taking instant pictures, or like, you know, Polaroid pictures of a prostitute that you were photographing for another project, and that you loved the rawness of those pictures, and you said that they were desperate to tell a story. Yeah. What did you see in those images that told you this?
I would say just the look on her face, her need to be sexual on camera. She was very, and I wish I could share the pictures. I have shared them online before, but I've shied away from putting it in the book. But she literally, one of the pictures, she's getting into my car and she flashes me her breast, and the look on her face is one of just, I don't know if it was anger or, but there was something there. You know what I mean? Like her story was, and then when you heard her talk on top of her story, because she was as Caucasian could be, but spoke with a very, sounded African American, or sounded like she was from the South and African American, and that's what she sounded like. And I don't know, the whole thing was interesting to me, and I wanted to know more.
And did you, was she kind of your first interview as well? Did you formally interview her, or just did you strike up a discussion with her and thought, maybe I could put these two things together?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd always struggled, and I talk about this in the book, but I'd always struggled with interviewing people because I don't have any background in that. So the aha moment for me with that encounter was, you know, I don't need to interview anybody. All I have to do is have a conversation with them. And that's what this project has been. You know, the reason why you know, there's BW all over the book is because, you know, my initials is because it's just a conversation. It's me sitting down on the curb with them and talking, you know, and that's how, you know, I think people trust that I'm not judging them. I'm just having a conversation with them, and that's what works for me.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder in this age of social media, if people see, you know, other people who are not kind of formal storytellers. I mean, you wouldn't consider yourself a formal storyteller, I think, just how you described, you know, the text part of your interaction, or the text part of the book here, which is based on your conversations you had with people. But I wonder if people on the outside of that nowadays, like, see people who are taking pictures and asking questions, like, as connected to the world of the internet, you know, and if there's any type of concern or thought about people's, their stories kind of being out in front of the world in a very present way, because it's, even though you're talking with them in a very closed, you know, space at a moment in time, their stories, you know, have this potential to live forever, really. But I think you didn't find that at all.
Which is the beauty of it. And furthermore, I think it's important to note that I was very upfront with everybody that I talked to about what their pictures would be and their stories would be used for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this being a kind of a pseudo photojournalistic project, I didn't need to get releases, but I did anyway, just because of that reason. I just I wanted to make sure that people understood what they were doing. And you know, I don't like, and this has happened a couple of times, I don't like having conversations where people are regretful about telling me their story. I like to have conversations where I show people the book and they're, you know, crying because they're so moved by their own story and their own picture. So that's what I try to do. That's always my goal, is to be very upfront with people and to have them understand what they're doing, and I like good outcomes. I like people to be happy about what they did with me.
Sure. Tell us about maybe one or two people in the book whose stories moved you the most.
Oh, you know, there's so many. But, you know, on the heels of just telling you about showing people the book over the weekend, and actually if you go on my site now, you'll see a story about a very brief story about it. But I came across this woman, Wanda, who had told me her story way back. And I saw her again when I was driving through East Point, which is a very close suburb of Atlanta. And I pulled over and I showed her the book, and she was one of those who did cry and was very happy and asked me how she could get a copy. And I knew she probably didn't have the money for it, so I gave her one, and she cried more, and it was awesome. But her story was about, like a lot of the stories in the book, it was about addiction, and it was very moving story about her daughter and her daughter's death. And so I would say that one, the story of Wanda, really spoke to me.
What can you tell us a little bit about maybe a little bit more about her story and about her connection about her daughter?
Sure. Yeah. She had had an abusive relationship, and she moved to Atlanta to be with her daughter. And I'm kind of paraphrasing right now, but her daughter became ill with diabetes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Wanda had a bad problem with crack cocaine. And so, I don't think she was very present for her daughter. But there were things that happened between Wanda and after her daughter had passed. I don't think I'm doing a very good job of this, of explaining it well, but basically it was about kind of a message from her daughter through a friend. And really what the story became about was, it became about a friendship connection with Wanda and this other girl, or this other woman, Lily, and them kind of helping each other through this tough time of trying to be sober while also being homeless. So I definitely didn't do a great job of explaining that, but it is on page 15 of the book.
Okay.
So, or go to the website and put in Wanda, and it will find the story for you.
Oh, great. So you have a little search engine on your website.
I do indeed.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like, I think I wanted to ask that question so that we, got a chance to talk and people got to hear a little bit of kind of an example of the types of stories that people will encounter in your book and on your website related to this project. So,
You asked about another one. I'll go ahead and share this other one.
Okay,
with you too.
Sure.
There's a woman named Jennifer who's in the book, and she's when you see her portrait, she's very tough looking, and she's got tattoos on her face. And I interviewed her, or I had a conversation with her in a neighborhood in Atlanta on the southwest side. And she told me the story of how she was born into the DFAC system and never got adopted out. So she stayed in the DFAC system all of her life. And she told me about the way that they used to discipline them through restraints and through chemical restraints, and went into detail about, kind of how they were disciplined in the DFAC system. And then she also told me about how when she aged out of the system, they took her from the system in cuffs to prison. So literally she had an obvious deficit of love, right? Mm-hmm. And she had this experience of being in a system her entire life and going from one to the other. And it was just such a clear cut example of people think, oh, people can just pull themselves up by the bootstraps. They should be able to, this person did it, why can't everybody do it? It's just doesn't hold true. I mean, when somebody has a life like that, it seems to me reasonable that they're going to make some bad choices, and that we as a society should be able to help them out and help them up and get a little healing. And right now, we don't do that in this country. I will get off my soapbox.
Well, I assume that when you go through an experience like creating this book, you know, and talking to all these people, how can you not come away with, you know, something like that? So it's completely understandable, completely in keeping, I guess, with a part of what you've seen and experienced and share with us. You quote on page 33, the journalist Johan Hari, who says the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's human connection. I just really, really loved that quote. I thought that was an amazing addition to your book.
Kind of goes with the last story too. I mean, her lack of connection, you know, caused all kinds of issues in her life. I love that quote. And Johan Hari, I'm just listening to his book again for the second time. And we'll talk about kind of my upcoming projects, but specifically I'm working on something specific about the opiate epidemic in this country right now. And he's done amazing work. And that quote really sums up a lot of his work. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Oh, good. So we'll get a chance to kind of revisit some of maybe your inspiration from him to you later on.
Yeah, sure.
Which is great. So, so I wanted to ask you about the structure of your book, because it's always very hard when you're creating something, a photographic project, you're not thinking about what's the first, you know, image in a book going to be, what's the last image, what's that arc of the story you're going to tell. That's something that you do afterwards, like once you've created a lot of work, a lot of images and a lot of kind of text. So your book starts with Amy, and tell us a little bit about Amy and why she was your choice for a starting point in the book.
Well, I think Amy was the clear place for me to start. And actually, I didn't know who was going to be the first one in the book until the very end. After actually doing the book a couple of times and then throwing it all up in the air and doing it again, I knew from the very beginning, and we can talk about this in a minute, what the last story was going to be right after I had the conversation with the guy and took the picture. But as far as Amy goes, you know, I think the fact that she talks about being from a KKK family and that type of thing, I loved her picture. I think her eyes are really powerful. There's some redemption in there, which, you know, I think makes the best stories, is when there's some hope, some redemption. I mean, if you look in her eyes, there's just so much there to me. So I guess for all of those various reasons, I wanted people to know what they were getting into right off the bat. And the first line of her story kind of let people know this is welcome to the Hidden South. And so that's why I chose it.
And the first line of her story is, I grew up in a KKK family.
Yeah.
It's just right there. Mm-hmm. It's right there. So, yeah. so you were just mentioning this, but your book ends with Roman.
Yeah.
And he talks about his experience, his recent experience at the time that you saw him with leukemia.
Yeah.
And he kind of strikes, I think, kind of an optimistic tone, not an overtly optimistic tone, but there's something kind of open about it. It's like he leaves it kind of open ended, you know, and you kind of, that seems to resonate with you in your conversation with him. Why was he the perfect ending?
Well, because there was, I can get emotional talking about it. He was on the journey of a lifetime. For me, the Appalachian Trail has always been kind of a dream to hike that. And he was actually doing it. He was doing it for the love of life. And he was literally hiking back to God's thumbprint. I mean, it was just so clear to me, as clear as when I took the picture of the cover, that, you know, where he should be in the book. because the hope is subtle. I think the hope is subtle in, you know, any of the stories that contain hope, but it's palatable, I think. I mean, I think it's I love his story. To me, his story is so full of hope, and it's full of truth too. It's not that kind of hope that the Disney type of hope. It's mm-hmm. it's like you know, this is real life, and it's still good, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really thought he was a perfect way to end the story or to end the book, which is a story in a way. And I like how. I can't say enough about it. I really thought that was a great way to end it. And I felt a connection with him too. I mean, some of the other people, it's because their lives are so far away from what I'm familiar with life. You know, it's a little, there's some of them, it's a little harder. They're, you know, to kind of connect with them on a human level.
Sure.
But him, I felt that was, it was, I didn't feel that way. I felt connected to him.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too.
So how did you choose the order? So beyond that, so we have the beginning photo and the ending photo. How did you choose the in-between photos? What were you trying to say there?
I'll tell you, like, the way I did it at first, I kind of had this idea in my head of I was gonna do the book in, like, five main sections. And it was going to go from kind of this cycle of addiction. Even though the book's not about addiction, that's kind of where I was coming from. So, you know, it was kind of, you know, you're in the bottom and then you kind of find the light, and you work your way back up. And the problem with organizing the book in that way was that it front loaded all of the worst of the worst in the very beginning of the book. And, you know, I hired, because I raised all the money on Kickstarter, I hired a publisher to help me create the book, because I'd never done one before. And the editor, or the person in charge over there, read the book, and she was adamant that I relook at the order. And, you know, I, at first I fought it, and I was like, no, this is the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to, you know, and then the more she argued her point, the more I was like, okay, I see what she's saying, and she's right. So at that point I had to start all over again. And instead of like five, defined sections, what I did was I created 12 mini sections with no titles and just kind of weave in and out of these different sections. So each new section starts with a black page, and I didn't want to label them. I just start with an excerpt from that section or a quote that I think is going to be applicable to that section. But what I tried to do is I tried to create a flow. I tried to, you know, typically, you know, it starts off with some really hard stuff, and then it goes up to a story at the end that has a little bit more hope. And, you know, my intent was to create a flow throughout the book, because it is heavy. I mean, it's really, you know, some of it's extremely heavy. Mm-hmm. So I tried my best to not intensify that heaviness, but to lighten that heaviness a little bit for the reader to be able to get through it. So really that was my intent. And I tried to do that as best as I could.
Mm-hmm. And you also do this kind of interesting thing, and you probably have a word for this and you can tell me what it is, but on the pages with portraits, it's almost like there's a tab that has the person's name on it, on the kind of upper part of the page, and then the page number, and then like another tab that has these hashtags in it, that are single word or phrases that kind of connect to themes that the person's talking about. Correct?
Yeah, that's true. I felt like I typically don't like to read read things like this in a linear way. Like if I'm looking at a photography book, I often jump around or I go from back to front or whatever. And I just wanted to give people the option to do that. I also wanted it to be loosely a reference book. So if this is sitting in a, you know, social worker's office, I wanted them, you know, after they've gone through the book and read everything, I wanted them to go be able to find Sylvia and her story, which, you know, happened to be about death and acceptance. You know what I mean? So I wanted these tabs to be informative and actually be functional. Yeah. So, you know, and obviously, you know, we live in a time where, you know, hashtags are important. And so I went with that theme. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought, yeah, why not? Everybody gets that. Everybody gets what that's supposed to be. It's supposed to be a descriptor, right?
So, right. Right. Exactly. And it's a way of, yeah, descriptor is a good word for it. And it also feels like it's a way of like very easily, summing up, you know, some of the complexities of the story so that they're easily referable, I guess.
Yeah. And I tried to be really careful not to label people. So
right.
I labeled their circumstances, but not them as a person.
Right. I think that's a really important distinction.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just went to Shantae's story and I see that she's hashtagged traumatic death, fuck it, in prison. Really, really interesting trio for her.
Well, I guess I didn't take out the fuck it tag. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, I didn't really have a rhyme or reason for the tags other than kind of what was in my mind at the time of writing and reading them. Maybe I was having a bad day that day.
Oh, no. Well, it's a part of what she says to you. So why wouldn't you use it? I mean, it's kind of perfect and suiting for her.
Hey, fuck it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So why did you choose to go the Kickstarter route for raising funds for your book?
Well, I didn't have any money and I,
there you go.
Right. I mean, you know, I've never created a book before, so it wasn't like I could call up one of the major publishers and say, look, you know, I've got this idea, and you know, they wouldn't have done it. I had followers. That's what I had. And I had people that were passionate about the project and passionate about seeing this book created. And so Kickstarter to me was an easy choice. So I'm getting ready to do another crowdfunding campaign, but, and here's the thing too, like, and crowdfunding is awesome because it not only are your supporters there for you, mm-hmm. but like Kickstarter really got behind my project. I mean, they were putting it on the homepage often. And so I got all these new people that were interested in the project, and it was, you know, it kind of each fed, you know, like my crowd fed the project, but so did these other people that I didn't know, you know, that weren't part of the project before, and now they are, you know. And it's a great way to kind of build an audience, and you know, people that participate in crowdfunding to me are some of the greatest people in the world too. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I'm glad that I'm surrounded by these people now, and it's awesome. I would highly recommend it. You have to be realistic, I think. You can't, you know, I see people starting things all the time when they don't have a base of support, or they, you know, the idea is kind of half-baked and it's not really thought out. So you have to treat it with respect, I think. But, you know, I would recommend it.
So you met your goal and had a very positive experience.
Yeah, I barely met it, but I met it.
Well, I think that's part of the realisticness about it too, is, you know, not every project is going to be funded. And I think understanding the scale of what your base can support, yeah, is really an important part of the process of using Kickstarter.
Yes, for sure. And, Yeah, and to be honest with you, this next round of funding, I'm asking for half the money, and I'm not using Kickstarter. And it's not because I have anything against Kickstarter. It's because it's an all-or-nothing platform. Now, when I did it, you know, I needed all of that money. You know, I was convinced that this is how much the travel is going to cost me. This is how much the book was going to cost me. And I really, you know, surprisingly, I'm not great at kind of hashing all this stuff out, but I nailed it almost down to the penny of what you know, this thing was going to cost.
Wow.
And so it made it important. I mean, like, I needed to make that much money or it just wasn't going to fly in my head. So Kickstarter made sense for that. This next one that I'm going to do, you know, I really need all the money that I'm asking for. But if I don't get it all, then I can still do what I need to do. You know what I mean? It's not for something as concrete as a book. So,
are you using GoFundMe or Indiegogo or something entirely different?
I looked at GoFundMe, but it feels like I would be a fish out of water because everybody that's on GoFundMe seems to have an issue that they're trying to fix. And I think of myself as an artist, you know, I'm creating stuff. So it didn't feel like a great fit for me. But Indiegogo does. So I think I'm going to go with Indiegogo. That's what I'm feeling right now.
Great. Great. Well, I'd love to hear what you're working on now. What are you working on now?
What am I working on now? I have this super secret new website that I'm going to launch. And so I mentioned that Tumblr had been where I drive all the traffic to now, that people that go to thehiddensouth.com go to Tumblr. Well, that's going to change very soon. It was way too restrictive. Like, there were pages that I wanted to create that it was just really hard. I mean, it's like working with one hand tied behind your back. So I've built a new website. I'm testing it now. I'm kind of getting some close people to me to look at it, and that's going to launch soon. And it's going to have a lot more going on with it than the current one does. And here's the big thing, and I will be announcing this soon. I'm not sure when this podcast is going out, but I'll go ahead and share it with you. I'm in the process of selling pretty much everything I own and buying a travel trailer, and I'm going to hit the road for a year and work on the next book. And so that's a
wow.
Big
move. Wow, that is huge.
Yeah, I just bought a big ass pickup truck, which I really never thought that I would buy a pickup truck. I had no need for a pickup truck, but I have to have something to tow my home around. And so that's what's going to happen. And that's what I'll be raising the money for, is to take this trip around the South. And during that time, I'll be trying to gather stories for the next book. But also, in addition to that, I will be working on these digital journals. And the digital journals will be based on specific issues. So this first one that I'm working on is about the opiate epidemic in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But it could easily be about being gay in the South. It could be about the prison system. It could be about whatever the subject might be. But the thing is that the journals are going to still be the stories. You know, it's still going to be told through the eyes of the people who are involved with that particular issue. And I think that's what's going to set it apart from anything else that's out there. I want to keep it digital because I want to use multimedia to tell the stories. I want to use audio and I want to use some video. I don't know if you've ever seen the New York Times project. What's it called? 1 in 8 million?
Sure.
Yeah. So I really love that type of storytelling, and I want to try to incorporate more and more of that. So I've been working on getting better at audio because it's obviously a key component to that type of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, those are the biggest things that are coming up, and you know, like I mentioned, it will hopefully be funded by a crowdfunding effort.
That's an amazing plan. That's really, really amazing. It's large, but somehow manageable, given that you already have done a book that kind of brought you through some of the experiences that you will be building on. Mm-hmm. So I wish you just extra good luck with all of that.
Well, thank you.
I will, since I will be following you, on various social media, I will know how it goes.
Absolutely. I hope so. And I will follow you back.
Well, thanks very much. Can you, my life is a lot less compelling than yours is at the moment. So you'll just see a lot of family pictures, but it comes in waves. My work.
Well, hopefully I'll hear some great, some great broadcasts.
Oh yes. Well, that, of course. Right. Can you tell us where people can buy your book? The Hidden South.
Yes, it's on Amazon.com. So if you go to Amazon, it is there. If you just type in The Hidden South, or you can go to my website, thehiddensouth.com. Very soon, I will be selling it. I was selling it on my website, and then I quit and just kind of pointed everybody towards Amazon. But I think I'm going to start selling it again on my website very shortly, probably within the next 4 or 5 days. So if you go to thehiddensouth.com, that would be my preference. If you want to get it on Amazon, that's fine too.
Okay, great. Two places to get access to your book.
Yeah, and it's in Atlanta. It's all over the place. But, you know, kind of being a one-man show, part of this trip is about spreading the word about the book, too. So I will be getting out there and talking to people that are hopefully professors and getting it into different systems, college systems, and all that stuff. So,
are you have you thought about or have you tried to exhibit the photos?
Yeah, I have. I've done a lot of book signings since the book has launched, and as part of the last one, I did. You're probably not familiar with Decatur, but it's a suburb of Atlanta, and it's. It's a great little great town, and the library there invited me to speak, and so they have my work hanging in the library right now. And I also, you know, I did a big book launch, and so I had it hanging at the place where I did the book launch for a long time. And then I've got another library thing that I'm doing in a month, and they may or may not hang some pieces in there, but yeah, I'm open to it. You know, I really, I like hanging the work with the stories because I think the stories are such a compelling part of the of it. I almost hate to hang the pictures by themselves.
Oh, I absolutely agree. They absolutely need to have the stories, the context there. I think it's essential.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us. It was really a pleasure to hear about your book and about your plans and really how passionate you are about what you do. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking me to be on. Sure. I really enjoyed it.